Now we'll move on to the letter A in the Caress Active Listening Model, acknowledging. In simple terms, this means you show the speaker that you're listening. There's a lot of ways to communicate that you accept or understand or appreciate what someone else is saying. Let's listen to a brief vignette in which Tom, who's the person doing most of the listening, illustrates my point.
Hey, Fred, what's going on?
I just got through a rough period at work. Big project, and my job was on the line if it didn't turn out great.
So did it?
You bet. But my team was the champ. I didn't do it alone.
That's terrific.
Yeah, we even came in under budget.
Huh?
Yeah. I'm going to take them all out for a big dinner.
Well, that'll keep them happy.
Do you suppose that Fred felt heard by Tom in this example? Absolutely. Why? Because Tom had a variety of ways of acknowledging what he was hearing. When someone says, "What's going on?" they may or may not be interested in the answer. It could just be a polite way of making conversation. But when Fred gave Tom a real answer, Tom immediately acknowledged by asking him another question to draw him out. Fred was encouraged, and so he mentioned a further piece of information about his team. Tom followed with a strong, "That's terrific," and didn't change the subject, indicating that he was open to more. What we couldn't see was Tom's eye contact, the expression on his face, his body posture, all nonverbal ways that he was acknowledging Fred's statements. Now let's listen to another vignette, this time between Grace and Betty, to pick up on their acknowledging behaviors.
Hi, Betty. It's good to see you. Do you have time to join me for a coffee?
Well, for just a minute. I've got a lot of errands to do today.
Sure. You know my brother's in the hospital, and I'm worried. They're doing some exploratory surgery, and it could be serious.
Oh, stop worrying. He's going to be fine. My next-door neighbor just had some exploratory surgery, and he's okay.
Well, I know it's probably going to be okay.
And anyway, I saw your brother last week, and he looked fine. I ran into him at the post office because I was mailing my sister a big package of kids' clothes. You know, she's got twins and needs all the help she can get, so I sent herself Robbie's old clothes.
Well, that's nice of you. I wonder if I should call the hospital. The surgery should be over by now. Do you think I should?
Call the hospital? And bother them? No. Why don't you come with me? You know, there's a big sale going on at Cost Less, and I've been thinking of putting some new curtains in my kitchen.
Do you think Grace felt heard? Her friend Betty was barely acknowledging what she said, and certainly wasn't acknowledging Grace's concerns about her brother. Betty discounted Grace's feelings right at the start by saying, "Stop worrying." Betty cut her off before she could finish her thought, then changed the subject twice. Betty didn't show any empathy, that is, a feeling of sharing what Grace must be feeling. Instead of listening and encouraging more, as Tom did with Fred earlier, Betty kept trying to change the subject. Think for a moment of a person with whom you really enjoy sharing a conversation. That person should be somebody you like to schedule time with, just to talk. It may be your spouse, someone you work with, an old friend, someone who makes you feel completely comfortable, and with whom you can raise any topic under the sun. Now think about why you enjoy talking with that person so much. Maybe she has stimulating things to talk about. Maybe he's non-judgmental and takes everything you say as food for thought. Or maybe she's genuinely funny and makes you laugh. Those are all important reasons. But the one bottom line reason is probably that the person always shows genuine interest in you and what you're saying. But how? How does he show interest? Have you ever given it any thought? That person quite likely demonstrates consistent interest through acknowledgement. Acknowledgement can be verbal, that is, through words, or nonverbal, through sounds and behaviors. In the context of active listening, acknowledging means you give positive, observable, and frequently audible signs to indicate that you're listening to, understanding, and appreciating what the speaker says. As an active listener, your acknowledgement communicates an attitude of acceptance. You're communicating that you think the speaker is a worthwhile person and that what she's saying is worthwhile. On the other hand, signs and behaviors that indicate non-acknowledgement communicate disapproval, rejection, or non-interest. That certainly weakens the relationship between the speaker and the listener. In those two vignettes we just heard, How do you think Fred's going to feel about talking to Tom the next time he sees him? How is Grace going to feel the next time she has something serious on her mind and she runs into Betty? I think the answers are pretty obvious. We open up to people who make it clear that they welcome and want to share our thoughts and feelings. We shut down with people who aren't interested. I'm going to give you a list of both positive and negative acknowledging habits, and I'll briefly pause after each one. Think about sitting across from someone while you're talking and ask yourself whether that behavior would encourage or discourage you from continuing the conversation. Here we go. You're talking and the other person yawns, maintains good eye contact, smiles, leans away from you, looks at a watch, nods his head as you speak, looks at the ceiling, says, uh-huh, says, uh-huh, leans forward, raises his eyebrows, asks questions relating to what you're talking about, changes the subject. Most of these are subtle behaviors, and yet, I'll bet it was quite easy to get a feel for the effect each one would have on the speaker. Other forms of negative behavior include interrupting, keeping a poker face, becoming distracted by any chance noise, crossing your arms across your chest, or playing with rings or jewelry. Those are all signs from the listener, usually not consciously communicated, that he or she is bored with the conversation. I've collected a list of negative acknowledging habits that most people agree are irritating. As you listen to each one, think about how much it bothers you. Think about whether it might be something that you do on occasion, too.
He never looks at me while I talk. I'm not sure he's listening.
Occasionally, he asks a question about what I've just told him that shows he wasn't really listening.
He changes what I say by putting words in my mouth.
All the time I'm talking, she's looking out the window.
He continually toys with a pencil or a napkin or some other thing while I'm talking.
He argues with everything I have to say, even before I finish my case.
She never smiles.
Everything I say reminds him of an experience he's either had or heard of. I get frustrated when he interrupts saying, "That reminds me."
She looks as though she's appraising me. I feel like I must have a smudge on my face or something between my teeth.
When I'm talking, he finishes sentences for me.
She acts as if she's just waiting for me to finish so she can give me her opinion.
He discounts my feelings by telling me not to feel that way.
She overdoes it by sounding like she just came from some training program. Too many uh-huhs or mm-hmms. She's concentrating on demonstrating her listening skills and not on what I'm saying.
She acts as if nothing I say is new to her, as if she's heard it all before.
Any of those behaviors sound familiar? The problem with those negative habits is that we're often completely unaware that we're doing them. It's not a bad idea, if you feel comfortable enough, to ask somebody close to you if you have any of those habits. Chances are, the person will be happy to point out any that you do have once you mentioned it. And the best way to combat negative acknowledging habits is to replace them with positive ones. It might feel a little awkward at first, but changing behavior patterns usually does. And be careful not to overdo it. Remember, one of those negative habits is to act like you've just come from a training program on good listening behaviors. When you can comfortably acknowledge your speaker both verbally and nonverbally, you accomplish many things. For one, you show that you are listening, and you demonstrate that you understand the content, you understand how he or she feels, and you're interested in what they have to say. This builds that all-important ingredient in a relationship, trust. The speaker will then feel more comfortable with you, may be more willing to cooperate with you, and will be more likely to reciprocate when it's your turn to talk. One of the critical areas where acknowledging can make or break a conversation is in a customer service call. Let's listen to this one.
Hello, Super Software Company, customer service. How can I help you?
Yeah, I bought the new Fast Track accounting program from you, and I can't make it work in my computer. I want someone from your company to come to my office and fix it.
I can understand your frustration when a program you just bought doesn't work. What kind of computer do you have?
It's a Mac, and the software is supposed to be for a Mac. Now, look, I know my machine. I do all kinds of sophisticated programs on it. This one's supposed to be simple.
I'm sorry, sir, but our company doesn't provide on-location service. We would be happy
Listen, I'm telling you, I need help. We're doing our quarterly profit and loss statement, and we need to have this thing work.
I want to help you, and we will.
I spend a lot of money with your company every year, and I expect some support.
We appreciate your doing business with us, and if
I,
you...
I don't want to have to bring this thing back to your headquarters and take this over your head.
Sir, I understand you're upset about this program not working in your computer and how you need to have one functioning right away. Why don't we see if it's the program? We'll send you a replacement today. If that doesn't work, call me back and we'll take the next step.
All right.
A customer service representative often has to take it on the chin from irate customers for problems that he or she had no part in causing. It's a real test of your active listening skills when someone is yelling at you and you need to remain cool and collected. You may have noticed how the service rep in this dialogue kept acknowledging the man's anger. I understand. I want to help you. We appreciate. Odds are that the problem is with the customer's inability to install the software, but the service rep never shifts the problem that way. She understands that it's more important to hold on to this customer by making sure he feels heard. It's not a question of who's right or wrong at this point. The basic rule of active listening that's most often broken is this. It's impossible to listen and plan your response at the same time. If the service rep had been trained to give some standard company line to anyone calling with an installation problem, this customer probably would have reacted even more strongly. Even though the customer cut her off several times, she didn't allow it to undermine her ability to concentrate on what the man was saying. She tried to respond specifically to everything he said. His anger and frustration needed to be vented, and she knew it. That's a good policy whenever you find yourself locked into a difficult conversation with someone who's angry. Let them vent. Hear them out. Acknowledge their feelings without discounting them. And rather than defending yourself, wait until all the speaker's points are made. Then you'll have your chance, hopefully uninterrupted, to explain your views. A good listener relaxes and doesn't give the impression that he wants to jump right in and talk. In addition, pay attention to the quality of your voice tone. You may say all the right words, but if they're not said with a positive tone, you're actually giving a negative acknowledgement. No matter what the actual words are, if your tone of voice says, "I'm angry too," or "You're hopeless," or "Is there any other stupid things you want to say?" Then you're communicating signals of non-acknowledgement. The only way to make sure your voice quality doesn't contradict your words is to pay attention to it in a difficult conversation. One of the techniques for concentration that I mentioned earlier, deep breathing, also has the benefit of allowing your voice to stay in your natural range. We'll talk more about that when we discuss the E of caress, emotional control. What we've talked about so far in regard to acknowledging are simple behaviors, both verbal and nonverbal, that play a role in ordinary conversations. Acknowledging also has another level of practice that requires a more sophisticated understanding of human dynamics. We'll spend some time now exploring that level. It pertains to conversations which have a primary emphasis on feelings rather than facts. These conversations occur in intimate relationships, as with your partner, spouse, child, or a close friend. They also occur in conversations where the speaker is angry, in pain, ill, about to make a major life decision, such as buying a house, or about to lose his job, or she's talking about a traumatic experience such as surviving an earthquake or about a strongly held opinion or belief. In some of life's most important conversations, it's crucial to know how you can encourage the person to process their feelings without getting in their way. Let's listen now to two brief conversations. Vicky is the primary speaker in both cases, and she's trying to talk about the same topic, how she feels about her new boss. In one conversation, the listener uses active listening techniques to encourage her to express herself. In the other, the listener gets in the way of Vicky's being able to express herself and figure the situation out. Decide which of the following conversations involves active listening. Here's the first.
I just don't know if I can continue doing my work with this new manager they've just hired. I'm trying to act professionally, but he's driving me crazy.
Well, what's he up to?
He's already given me 3 times as much work as I'm used to, and I had a lot before. He's rude, and I think he's even trying to flirt with me, even though I keep pictures of Bob and the kids on my desk in plain sight.
You need to have a talk with him right away, or with his supervisor. You don't have to take that with all the years you've put in there.
Well, it's not as simple as that. This guy was hired from our major competitor. They're paying him a fortune, and he's good at what he does.
You ought to tell him directly that your workload is too much and make obvious remarks about Bob and the kids.
I've been trying to do that subtly, but I don't want to start off on the wrong foot with him. He could easily get me transferred to some department where I'd be more miserable. I just don't know what to do, Ted.
Now here's conversation number 2.
I just don't know if I can continue doing my work with this new manager they've just hired. I'm trying to act professionally, but he's driving me crazy.
How so?
Well, he's given me 3 times as much work as I'm used to, and I've had a lot before. This man is rude, and I think he's even trying to flirt with me, even though I keep pictures of Bob and the kids on my desk in plain sight.
Well, what have you tried to do about it?
Well, I've given him some small hints like, do you want this report done before the other 3 you gave me to do yesterday?
Uh-huh.
And I've mentioned the weekend getaway Bob and I are taking next month.
Hmm. What about his manner really irritates you?
I think it's just that he's all business. John and I used to get the work done when he was my boss, but I felt more like a colleague, not just some hired help. You know, as I talk about it, I realize that I kind of got cowed by this guy. He blew in with all this company fanfare about how great he was. We all expect him to walk on water. I think he feels he's supposed to do that, too, and he's got to act like it. I've been a little stiff with him. Maybe I should give him a couple more weeks and see if he relaxes a little bit. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like you have a good handle on the situation. I'd trust my instincts if I were you.
Hmm.
You know how valuable you are to the company. This guy needs to discover that for himself.
Thanks for listening, Gary. I feel better.
Same speaker, 2 different listeners. Which conversation seemed to help Vicky more? The first one with Ted or the second one with Gary? One way to tell is through Vicky's final comment in each. In the conversation with Ted, she still felt confused and frustrated at the end, even with all of Ted's advice. In the one with Gary, she said she felt better and she'd been helped by his listening. The most glaring difference between the 2 conversations was how the listener handled Vicky's feelings. Ted reacted to her feelings as he would react in a similar situation. He'd talk directly to the guy or go to the supervisor. That clearly wasn't the way Vicky wanted to handle it. Ted's use of "you need to," "you oughta," did not acknowledge Vicky's feelings. Instead, they were attempts to fix the situation, to give advice, or to step in. On the other hand, Gary never offered a quick fix. He tried to draw Vicky out to look at the situation more carefully, beyond the anger she was feeling. When she did, she discovered some things about the situation that she hadn't considered. She also realized that she had used common sense in trying to address the problems. She'd made mention to her new boss of the workload and of her relationship with her husband. In contrast, Ted didn't make any attempt to ask Vicky what solution she tried. He just offered his own. Gary knew that Vicky could figure out some answers for herself if she could just get beyond the anger. This is often true when you're listening to someone vent deep feelings. Psychotherapists and counselors know that people often have good ideas about how to proceed in handling their problems. They know their own situation best. They just need to be helped past the strong emotions to see things more clearly. In a word, the task of acknowledgement in those situations comes down to being a witness. To be an effective witness requires that we pay attention, not interpret, not judge, not try to fix the other person. It's not about giving advice. It's simply about listening with an open mind and an open heart. Being a witness for someone means creating a safe environment for that person to explore their feelings and possible solutions. There's something very compelling about having the undivided, non-judgmental attention of another person. That's why some people pay $50, $100, even $200 an hour to see a therapist. Just because they have the therapist's full attention without criticism or advice giving. Having that undivided attention is why some people spill their life stories to a perfect stranger on an airplane ride. When you're a witness to another person's feelings, you create a safe place for that person to express their vulnerabilities. It's a gift. When people speak from deep feelings, they need more than anything else to be seen, heard, felt, and accepted. The essence of the witness process is to validate the speaker's feelings of pain, concern for having made a mistake or a serious blunder, or whatever. When someone is speaking on such a topic and they're not heard by the other person from the stance of witness, it can take a long time for them to regain the courage to tell the story again. Let me give you some guidelines on what constitutes negative acknowledgement in conversations involving feelings. The categories of negative acknowledgement are evaluating, advice giving, diagnosing, warning, lecturing, or devaluing. Let's take each category one by one, and you'll begin to see a pattern that defines all of them as negative. Evaluating comments are the ones such as, you shouldn't have, your responsibility is, you should have known better. That's ridiculous. Those comments make people defensive and resistant to further communication. They also threaten and reduce the other person's self-esteem. We all know the advice-giving comments. You should, you oughta, why don't you try, my advice is. All those kinds of comments, no matter how well-intentioned they may be, do not acknowledge the other person's feelings and do not let them explore their own solutions. Advice giving always meets the needs of the advice giver more than it meets the needs of the recipient. It also communicates a lack of trust in the other person's ability to solve their own problems. Diagnosing another person's feelings sounds like this. What you need is, you don't really mean that. Your problem is, or I know just what you're talking about. I had a similar situation. Telling people how they feel or why they feel that way can be a double-edged sword. If the diagnosis is wrong, the speaker feels awkward. If the diagnosis is right, the speaker may feel exposed, not ready to confront the issue at that level. Here's an example. The speaker expresses a feeling of apathy, a lack of motivation to meet a set goal. The listener offers a diagnosis that the speaker's father is a hard driver, expecting a lot from his son. Succeeding may mean pleasing a father he hates. Let's say that's an accurate diagnosis in this case. And when the listener voices it, she opens up a level of discussion she has no right to trespass on. The speaker, like most people, doesn't want to be told why he feels the way he feels or to be in a therapy session he didn't ask for. Warnings are a form of advice giving in disguise. They're often inappropriate listener responses, too. You had better. If you don't, and other warnings of dire consequences produce resentment and resistance on the part of the speaker. It's better to draw the speaker out and let him or her personally discover any dire consequences. Lectures, by their very definition, make the speaker feel inferior or defensive. Don't you realize? Here's where you're not thinking clearly. Well, the facts are. Those phrases indicate a lecture is to follow. And one of the most insidious kinds of negative acknowledgments is the devaluing or discounting of the other person's feelings. That's not so bad. Don't worry. Oh, you shouldn't feel that way. Are all examples of devaluing or discounting. Again, they may be well-intentioned. They may be meant in a spirit of comfort. But instead of making the speaker's feelings go away, they just make those feelings more repressed. What's the pattern that connects all of these negative forms of acknowledgement? The listener is projecting his or her own feelings into the situation, not allowing the speaker's feelings to be drawn out and explored. What's a more appropriate way to acknowledge a speaker's feelings? The way we recommend in the caress model? It's to draw out, reflect back, and support the legitimacy of those feelings. It doesn't necessarily mean agreeing with them, but it does mean being a witness, creating that safe place for exploration. Reflecting back can take several forms. Phrases such as, "It sounds to me like what you're feeling is," or "You seem to be feeling," can start the reflective process. Or you can simply start with, "Say more about how you're feeling," or even, "What's it like for you to feel frustrated?" Another possibility is, "Could you explain what you mean by that?" What you as the listener are attempting to do is reflect back what you think you heard while leaving it open for the speaker to disagree. Don't assume that you understand the other person's use of words like angry or depressed or confused. You may not be on the same wavelength with regard to those words. With reflecting, you're also trying to draw the other person out, to go deeper into the feelings, to get behind the strong emotion and give words to the experience. This allows the speaker to better define and clarify their feelings. As we heard in the conversation between Vicky and Gary, when the speaker is allowed the time to explore, she often comes up with more insights on the situation. Reflecting statements are useful in the early stages of a conversation, and supportive statements such as, "I can see why you really feel that way," or, "Sounds like you're really grappling with that situation," can be used any time you sense the speaker needs a boost to continue the discussion. The next level of response in active listening involves probing and paraphrasing what the person's saying. And we'll go into depth on those skills in the next segment when we cover R for research and respond. So let's wrap up our discussion of acknowledging by recalling what we said at the beginning. Acknowledging is simply letting the speaker know that you're genuinely interested in what they have to say. You do that by verbal and nonverbal signals that show you understand the message and appreciate their feelings. In situations where deeper feelings are being expressed, you're careful not to project your own feelings by evaluating, giving advice, diagnosing, lecturing, or devaluing what the person says. Instead, you reflect back what you think you're hearing, and you try to create a supportive environment where you function as a witness to their feelings, not as someone who tries to judge or fix them. We've already spent nearly 2 hours dissecting the simple act of listening, and we've only scratched the surface by talking about concentration and acknowledgement. By taking the act of listening apart, so to speak, I hope you're appreciating what a subtle and sophisticated skill it is. And I hope you're growing in your awareness of what you can do to enhance your own abilities.